Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. And hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's Behind the Curtain podcast. We're going to go into presidential politics, but probably not the one you think. We're going to take a look at President Abraham Lincoln with a guest I've talked to on this show before, as well as my Politics Tonight show. And that is Sidney Blumenthal, because he just had volume 3 of what will be a 5-volume exhaustive set on Abraham Lincoln coming out. The third volume is now out. We've talked before about the previous volumes, The Self-Made Man, Wrestling with His Angel, and just amazing stuff. Sidney himself is a former assistant and senior advisor to President Bill Clinton, a senior advisor to Hillary Clinton. He's been on the national staff and is a reporter for the Washington Post and Washington editor and writer for the New Yorker, written tons of books. I love the fact that he was born and raised in Illinois, but apparently we lost him to Washington, D.C., where he lives now. Sidney, welcome back to the podcast. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, although we've talked about it before, we will talk about this. Let me ask you, you know, there are other Lincoln scholars, right? Doris Kearns Goodwin is out there writing her book with her, you know, her guys, as she calls them, Lincoln being one of them. Michael Burlingame has written what I thought was considered to be an exhaustive description of Lincoln's life. Clearly, yours is longer because it's 5 volumes, but what special perspective do you take to the political life of Abraham Lincoln, the life of Abraham Lincoln, that maybe other scholars aren't taking?
Well, a key word there is exhaustive. What I found is that Lincoln is an inexhaustible subject, and the subtitle or the overarching title for all of my volumes is The Political Life of Abraham Lincoln. He was a practical politician to the marrow of his bones, and he was highly unusual as a politician and as a man, as we know. And I've learned more and more and more about him, and the more I learn, the more I begin to penetrate his character and the events in which he was part and how he saved the nation. And I find that there's always something new to learn about Abraham Lincoln.
In the work that you do you come across maybe documents that have never been seen before, or, you know, just something that the public, I mean, there's so much work on Lincoln. When we come to your work, are we reading about things, hearing about things we have not ever seen before?
Well, I think not only is my interpretation unique in understanding Lincoln, his rise, and how he worked to put together by himself the political power from virtually nothing and created the Illinois Republican Party to becoming elected president within a period of 4 years in this volume. But I have also uncovered newspaper articles from old newspapers no one's seen, documents. I've been in archives. I've put together all sorts of material on not only on Lincoln, but on all the people surrounding him. This is a book that's 360. It shows the whole, you are living in Lincoln's world. You see the people that Lincoln understood. Lincoln was observing keenly everything going around him. And this book deals with the abolitionist Senator Charles Sumner and his in the near murderous caning that he suffered on the floor of the Senate, John Brown and his raid on Harper's Ferry and his relationship with the New England abolitionists, and also the murders that he committed on the plains of Kansas, everything that happened in the inside Washington involving two dysfunctional presidencies, Franklin Pierce and James Buchanan, that created the civil strife that led to Lincoln's rise. So I could speak almost endlessly about these subjects. I am a journalist in part, as well as somebody who worked in the White House and served in government, worked closely with the president, and I'm bringing all that to bear on this world that I'm trying to bring to life about Abraham Lincoln.
When did your interest first start? I mean, were you as a kid? I know as I'll be honest, my brother is a Lincoln fanatic. He's got your book. He absolutely got so excited when he saw it. But he also loved Lincoln even as a child. Did this start early for you, or as the years went on and you went to high school and college and whatever, this appreciation for the life of Lincoln hit you?
Well, I would say my interest in Lincoln started when I was a child, growing up in Chicago. I was my grandmother's first cousin was a salesman, and he went on a trip to Springfield, and he took me and his daughter, who was my cousin, and we went to Springfield, and I saw all the shrines and the sites and everything involving Lincoln. And it made an enormous impression about me, in me, about Lincoln. And I tried to learn as much as I could about it. I read as when I was in high school through Carl Sandburg's books. And I was lucky. You know, I'm a graduate of the Chicago Public Schools, and I was lucky to have wonderful history teachers, too, in the public schools at Sullivan High School. And they also excited in me an interest in history, and that helped too. I'm a real beneficiary of public education in Chicago, and this book is in part a product of that. So, you know, I always kept a picture of Lincoln in my office in the West Wing of the White House. It's a picture of Lincoln in 1860, and he's sort of staring at the camera, and I always felt he was staring at me. Hmm. And I always wondered about, you know, what he might think about what we were going through and, you know, what kind of judgment he would make. So I've always had Lincoln in mind as well as Lincoln's eyes on me.
And, by the way, I'm going to take that answer and send it to the Chicago Public Schools. They could probably use some positive press about now. But let me, you know, when you think of Lincoln, I mean, here's a guy, if you didn't know who he was, and you just talked about his background, say your first two books, you'd say, well, that's a guy who's going to just grow up to, you know, maybe be a lawyer, and that would be very successful, which Lincoln did. Two-part question. Second part isn't fair. The first part is, what is it about Lincoln's character and personality as you've studied him, especially as you bring him into these 4 years of Volume 3, that instilled this guy's going to be a president one day? And the second question is, you work closely with the Clintons. You are so close with the Clintons. Did you look at a background of, say, a Bill Clinton who also started with very humble beginnings and ended up to be president? Would you draw any parallels there in terms of the background? That's not a political question about Clinton. It's just a boy comes from nothing and becomes president question.
Well, I think, you know, the Clinton parallel is interesting, but I was not necessarily thinking about Bill Clinton in writing about Lincoln. I mean, I've written about Clinton in a book called The Clinton Wars. And Clinton, in fact, did rise from very humble beginnings. And I've talked to him about it. And I knew his mother, you know, who grew up poor and became a nurse and so on. I spent time with her in her house mm-hmm. in Arkansas. And, you know, I knew Clinton's family. And talk to him about his grandparents.
It's not an unfair question.
I wish I could do the same with Lincoln. You know, Lincoln grew up, you know, the son of a poor dirt farmer who fled from Kentucky to Indiana and then into Illinois because he felt he was competing with slaves. He rented Lincoln out as a boy. Lincoln said, "I used to be a slave." He was a slave to his father. He felt he emancipated himself at the age of 21 when he was free of his father and could become his own person. He told the crowd when he became a Republican in 1856, "I used to be a slave, but now they let me practice law." He made himself into a lawyer. The first book's called The Self-Made Man in the Lincoln biography, and he certainly was. What's unique about Lincoln is that he is somebody who suffered depression as well, and came from the most humble background. He married a prominent, a socially prominent woman, Mary Todd. He made himself into a lawyer. He was elected to Congress. He became a pretty, you know, prosperous lawyer in central Illinois. But, you know, by, you know, the mid-1850s, he's obscure. He's a completely political person who feels forgotten, and he's despairing. He becomes, by this time, one of the most self-disciplined men you can ever study. He's determined. He's focused. He works out his own ideas internally himself. He writes his own speeches. He develops his own arguments. He's a lawyer. He wants to win the case. He always wants to win the case. He wants to persuade a jury. And he has a sense of who is a member of the jury, the common people who he appears before in Illinois. And he knows all levels of society in Illinois. He's a very skilled, unusual, and underestimated person by the time he enters into the politics that will lead him to the presidency in this volume.
You mentioned John Brown is this period. Let's also toss in Dred Scott. That was also this period of this book. And you're right. We do get to know the people that surround him. I mean, especially Stephen Douglas. So much detail in all those directions. Would you describe Lincoln as a product of his time? I mean, he had to reinvent himself. He had been a loyal Whig, as you write about that. He had to kind of reinvent the Republican Party of his day. Was Lincoln a product? Would he be Abraham Lincoln today, or are we just in such a different time that this is not the time that a Lincoln would shine through?
Well, Lincoln would have certainly understood the issues of the day, and American politics, you know, despite the passage of of the decades and the centuries, is still American politics, Lincoln would have risen to the top, I believe. And he would have understood, above all, the crisis of the Constitution and democracy that we're facing today. He's the one who faced the greatest one and defined it in speech after speech and created a political organization to grapple with the problem. And then, as president, he faced the worst crisis in the nation's history. He certainly would have understood demagogues. He would have understood dysfunctional presidencies. He would have understood the chaos of parties breaking up. He would have understood the nature of political leadership and the methods of politics. Would have understood communications. He became a master of communication, working through the media of the day, which were newspapers. But he would have easily understood how media has been transformed and why it was essential to communicate with the public. He understood public opinion. He talked a lot about it. We notice today that Nancy Pelosi says, quotes Lincoln all the time, his statement that public sentiment is everything and that our form of government is based on it. Lincoln made many speeches on the nature of public opinion, on how it was based on, had to be based on principle. For him, it was the Declaration of Independence and that all men are created equal. But he also understood the what he called the steady and gradual debauching of public opinion by demagogues. So would Lincoln have understood politics today? I think better than many, if not all, of the people of the past.
Wow. I guess you're going to get more into this particular issue maybe in the next volume, given the timing. But I can ask you anyway, because you'll have the answer, which is, I have heard, and maybe we've talked about it in the past, that Lincoln was very pragmatic, that, you know, he's famous for freeing the slaves and all that he did. But apparently, if Lincoln had the sense that the continuation and growth of slavery would have saved the Union, he would have gone in that direction. I think his personal feelings were against slavery, but what is your reaction to that argument that people say, look, he was pragmatic, he would have done what he needed to do?
Well, Lincoln was, as he said in an autobiography dictated during the 1860 campaign, always naturally anti-slavery, and he was. His whole family narrative was to flee slavery. He said that slave states are places for poor whites to remove from. So in a sense, he thought of himself as a kind of fugitive in his family, fugitive from slavery. Lincoln wrote private notes to himself that were not discovered until sometimes decades after his death by his private secretaries, John Hay and John Nicolay, who wrote a 10-volume biography of Lincoln. And in some of them, he wrote about his inspiration in the English emancipation movement his feeling that eventually emancipation had to come and that those who worked for it would be remembered in history and those who did not would be forgotten. And he wanted to be one of those remembered. During the war, emancipation was a very difficult political issue. And Lincoln was someone who was indeed pragmatic, and he stepped forward carefully. Lincoln himself said, I move forward slowly, but when I do, I never go back. He wanted to step on solid ground. So we know of his famous statement in his debate with Horace Greeley, the editor of the New York Tribune, who challenged him about emancipation before the release of the Emancipation Proclamation in its announcement in 1862. And he urged Lincoln to issue one. And Lincoln said, if I could save the Union without freeing the slaves, I would do so. If I could free the slaves to save the Union, I would do so. In fact, he made that statement after he had already decided himself to issue the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. So why did he make that statement? It goes back to the question of public opinion and his pragmatism. He was trying to prepare the public. He was trying to tell the public, if you hear about an Emancipation Proclamation, if I do that, it's because I'm trying to save the Union. And you should support it if you support the Union in this struggle. So, you know, he was trying to bring people along with him. He was practicing the arts of persuasion. And all along, those were Lincoln's concerns. He was not perfect. He made mistakes. He was very much a figure of his times, but he was also ahead of his time in many of his attitudes. I believe that the issue of Lincoln on race really is settled by none other than Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass pushed the great black abolitionist, former fugitive slave. He met Lincoln many times. He was astounded that Lincoln treated him as an equal. Lincoln extended his friendship to him, dealt with him as a partner in the war. And Douglass pushed him again and again and again on the Emancipation Proclamation before Lincoln issued it. And Douglass said after Lincoln's death, you know, we always felt he might have been vacillating and slow and foot dragging. But in fact, now I've come to a different conclusion, and that he was steady, zealous, even radical and determined. And so on this question, I think that I am going to rest on the judgment of Frederick Douglass on Abraham Lincoln.
Makes sense. So many people today, when you ask any president until the current one, you know, who you admire most and whatever, the answer is it's always Abraham Lincoln. Everybody looks to Abraham Lincoln. But Abraham Lincoln didn't get to look at Abraham Lincoln. So who would his mentors have been? Was it George Washington? Who did he admire? Or wasn't it necessarily a president? Was it perhaps people in his life?
Well, Lincoln had idols. You know, he had political idols who he looked up to. Of course, he revered George Washington and the founders and those who especially, you know, wrote the Constitution and signed the Declaration of Independence. And he believed that was the entire basis of his politics. But then after that, he looked up to Henry Clay, his beau ideal, as he called him, the leading political figure of Kentucky, who was a founder of the Whig Party. That was the party that Lincoln was associated with most of his life. Lincoln was a stalwart Whig. Clay had framed the story that Lincoln later adopted for himself. Clay was a poor boy, too, who rose through politics, who was became a lawyer, and believed in the Union. Clay said, "I know no east or west, north or south. I only know the United States." Lincoln adopted that view of stalwart unionism long before the Civil War. And like Clay, he believed in building up infrastructure to bind the to advance commerce, to create jobs, to advance progress, and to use government as a positive instrument for that. And when he was the floor leader of the Whigs in the Illinois legislature, he created what was called the system, and it led to the building of the Illinois and Michigan Canal. That's Lincoln's original project. And he was following Henry Clay, who believed in something called the American system to build up infrastructure throughout the country. You know, that's the origin of Lincoln, eventually as president, creating the Transcontinental Railroad. That's the origin of Lincoln advancing and signing the bill to create land-grant colleges, including the University of Illinois. So, you know, Lincoln's his achievements and his vision, you know, were inspired by other political figures before him. But particularly on constitutional questions, he believed in a living constitution that should be interpreted by changing circumstances, yet based in principle, especially the principle of the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal. And for that, he always revered the founders.
The Republican Party, because he's the father of the Republican Party. But of course, most people today only know the Republican Party as it exists today. What would Lincoln's reaction be or response to the Republican Party of today? And I guess you can answer that by sort of saying this is what it was back when Lincoln created it.
Well, Lincoln, you know, the Republican Party, when it was created, was first started by a bunch of isolated radicals, radical abolitionists. And when they first approached Lincoln, he still thought of himself as a Whig, and he didn't want to join it. And it was only when the Whig Party completely fell apart that he needed a political vehicle. The Republican Party was created state by state, and Lincoln's the one who created it in Illinois. He led in the creation. He was at the organizing committee meeting of, you know, a couple dozen people. He led the creation at the first convention. He gave the keynote address. He wrote the platform. And he had to draw together all kinds of elements. He had to draw together old Whigs who might have been conservative. He had to draw together radical abolitionists. He had to draw together anti-slavery Democrats and even a few dissident know-nothings, members of a nativist anti-immigrant party that became quite powerful, even in Illinois. And he wanted to drag them away from that cause and into the anti-slavery cause of progress. Lincoln hated nativism. He hated anti-immigrant feeling. Lincoln said he, rather than join the Know-Nothing Party, and if they ever got control, he'd rather go to a place where they practiced despotism without hypocrisy, like Russia. And he wanted to break up the Know-Nothing Party and break up the nativists and bring them into a greater cause and a progressive cause. He hated the appeal to white supremacy and to slavery and indifference to slavery, and the idea that blacks did not have natural rights under the Declaration of Independence. That's the essence of his debates with Stephen A. Douglas for the Senate in 1858, those famous seven debates in Illinois. So, you know, Lincoln is somebody who, you know, is practicing and developing a politics that become the Republican Party that is on a basis that is antithetical to the party of Trump right now. He would understand that because he changed parties, and he understood that parties themselves changed identities. He once told the story of two men who were drunk in Springfield fighting at night in the street and fought their way into each other's coats. And he said, that's sort of like what's happened to our political parties. We've fought our way into each other's coats. The Trump Party today has fought its way out of the principles of the party of Lincoln.
If you look at the great speeches of modern day presidents, and, you know, like Ronald Reagan, when he talked about the Challenger disaster to touch the face of God, well, that was great, except Peggy Noonan gets the credit for it. You always have to look to a speechwriter to see wonderful things that any president is saying. I'm not sure about John Kennedy, whether his famous inaugural, whatever, his words or a writer that helped him. But am I right in assuming that Lincoln's amazing speeches, A House Divided, the Gettysburg Address, he didn't have a staff of writers hanging around with him writing that stuff, right?
Well, the House Divided speech was a speech that he wrote himself in the law library of the old Illinois State Capitol. He studied all the law books and the newspapers of the time and the case studies and what was going on. And he wrote the speech out, "The House Divided Against Itself Cannot Stand." Of course, that comes from the Gospels. But then he said it can't stand half slave and half free. And then he said it will either become all one thing or all the other. And then he said, and the people will in time put slavery in the course of ultimate extinction. He brought in his inner circle of advisors to rehearse the speech. And to a man, they told him not to give it. One of the most famous speeches in American history, a speech we now believe is one of the great speeches, a House Divided speech. They thought it was too radical and that he would destroy his political career. He wrote it himself. Gettysburg Address, he had William Seward, who was his Secretary of State, who had been the former senator and governor of New York, on the train with him. And they talked, but these are Lincoln's words. Lincoln would sometimes talk to people, but Lincoln was his own speechwriter. He had a sense of developing an argument in what he said. He always wanted to answer somebody. He said about Henry Clay, his idol, he never gave a speech that was not for an effect. Lincoln always wanted to make an effect. He wasn't just delivering poetry. He wasn't doing it just to, spout fancy words. His words are unusually plain. He is one of the greatest writers in American history. He's lucid. He's compact. He's succinct. He's to the point. All of his words are designed to achieve an effect. Lincoln's one of the, his plainness of speech is, and his ability to master it and to deploy it is something that I think no other president on his own has done since Lincoln.
Tap into all of that and note that Lincoln was also known to have a very Kentucky twangy kind of a voice. And of course, in the old days when they made movies about Lincoln with like actors like Raymond Massey, and, you know, Lincoln was always presented as the 4 score and 7 years ago. But by the time we have know a little bit more, I think, accurately about him, and you put, say, Daniel Day-Lewis in the role, we have Lincoln sounding apparently like a bit more of the Kentucky high voice guy he was. And so the only reason I bring this up was to say, because his words are so commanding, was he seen as a charismatic figure in those days, or somebody whose words were incredible, but the way they got said in his high-pitched voice with a Kentucky accent didn't have the impact? I don't know.
Well, Lincoln was not thought of as Lincoln in the way that we think of him. He was a living man then, and even after he was president, he was often dismissed. There are many descriptions of key speeches and events where Lincoln appears. He speaks in this high, you know, high-pitched, reedy voice. His hair is a mess. He was wearing bad clothes. His pants are too short. His feet are too big. The suit doesn't fit. The sleeves are too short. The shirt sticks out. The neck doesn't fit right. And people think, you know, he's ungainly, he's awkward, and then he speaks. And after a few minutes, people are engrossed by what he's saying and carried along by his argument and by his and his growing intensity as he speaks. And time and again, it's the case, including the famous Cooper Union speech, that's what happens to him. Even as a president, you know, he was sort of demeaned. You know, Seward, who thought of himself as the front runner for the Republican nomination in 1860, was disappointed and became the Secretary of State. And it took him a while to warm to Lincoln. And he referred to him. He says, "You know, imagine how I feel having to deal with this, you know, provincial prairie lawyer." Lincoln, his education was, as he said, was poor. Lincoln was always trying to educate himself. He didn't go to college. He barely went to, for a few weeks, to some frontier school. People, you know, mistook him. But then people who worked with him closely saw that he was one of the sharpest and most penetrating minds and capable and canniest politicians that they could imagine. But it often took them a while. And those who underestimated him did so at their own peril.
Why this book takes a look at only 4 years, 56 to 60 of 1800. Why did you call it All the Powers of Earth?
All the Powers of Earth is a phrase of Lincoln's himself. It comes from the House Divided speech of 1858. And it's his acceptance speech, accepting the nomination of the Illinois Republican Party for the Senate nomination to run against Stephen A. Douglas. In that speech, he says all the powers of earth are arrayed against the slave. Everything's against him. And he says there are 100 keys locking him up in his cell. And these keys are dispersed to 100 men in 100 different locations. How can he ever be freed? And what Lincoln had to do was to build power, political power, chiefly on his own, in order to liberate that slave and also to carry himself and save the forward and save the country. And he did it. And this book describes it from his creation of the Illinois Republican Party forward until he creates a campaign that captures the Republican presidential nomination and eventually the presidency. And he's just at the beginning of developing the power that's required to save the country in its greatest crisis of democracy, in which democracy is threatened. secession. He says in his Cooper Union speech of February 1860, addressing the Southerners who threaten the destruction of our government if you don't get your way. He says, you intend to rule or ruin at all events. And Lincoln proposed against that the idea that right makes might. And beyond that, more than moral right, he was developing political power along the way. So Lincoln had to develop all the powers of earth for the cause of right against that which was undermining and subverting our democracy. And there's a lesson in that for the present.
You've got two volumes left and 5 years to play with. How do they divide up? Is volume four the first term?
Volume four takes Lincoln from winning the presidency through the terrible transition, the Sumter crisis, with the war, and through Gettysburg and the Gettysburg Address, and the Emancipation Proclamation. It's, you know, Lincoln is making good on the promise. And the fifth volume takes him from the beginning of 1864, discovering Grant as a general, another figure from Illinois, and winning the war, waging hard war, and the assassination, and then what follows from that, the promise and the destruction of Reconstruction, Lincoln's legacy. So there's a lot left for me to do here.
And when done, I assume you'll be doing a five-volume series on Trump?
I think I will leave that to others.
Okay. Just checking.
But if anyone wants to read what I think about Trump, I wrote a very long essay that was published a month after his inauguration in February of 2017 in the London Review of Books. It's a long piece called A Short History of the Trump Family. And that's my view of Trump, and I stand on it.
Well, I'll be curious to see it. You're very close with the Clintons. So have you talked to them lately about their views? Do they have hope for the future from their perspective?
Well, Hillary is out there.
She's got a new book.
She has a new book that she's written with Chelsea, and she's out in public talking about her views about the current crisis and about Trump. And I'm glad she's out there.
I was asked on our news, and other people are talking about it, that because she's out there, there are people who think she's about to announce her run for 2020. I said, absolutely not. What she's talking about is her book and getting out of this current crisis as she sees it. She's not saying a word about what the future needs to hold. And that says to me, she ain't running in 2020.
No, not at all. She's doing everything she can to encourage, you know, those forces to restore, you know, progress and democracy in our country. But she is certainly not a candidate herself.
I assume when Volume 4 is out, we'll talk again. You'll have Bill and Hillary online with us so we can all just have a little chat.
For you, Paul, anything.
I knew I could count on that. The book is All the Powers of Earth. It's volume three of a five-part series. This, by the way, conversation, as you would agree, Sydney, is different than we had on Politics Tonight. So for folks who want to get some different perspective and different takes on parts of the book from Politics Tonight, you can go online at cltv.com/politics tonight and see that in an interview. And in the course of the month of October, my colleague and friend Larry Potash returns with his very popular show Backstory, and he let me sit down with you to help him prepare for that segment, which will run in October. A lot of Sidney Blumenthal will appear in that special, a very unique story Larry will tell on the backstory tied to Lincoln. So with that's a lot of Sidney Blumenthal in the world of WGN, I got to tell you, but I'm happy for every moment of it.
Well, I'm always happy to be on WGN and to speak with you, and I've enjoyed every moment of it.
Well, me as well. The book is All the Powers of Earth, Volume 3. The author, Sidney Blumenthal. Check out all of his work. He's a great writer. I'll tell you, you're a great writer. And as always, I so appreciate and respect the fact that you take the time that you do to spend with me. Thank you, Sidney.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.